The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a great Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. It's great because we very seldom have big, big events that happen in the middle of the week when we do this. Having done this through the years, we have not had many Game 7s in any sport that happen on weeknights. And I don't have the number in front of me. I just know that I've sat down, and most often it's let's analyze the upcoming game, and that this is where we hope it goes, or we are looking for those storylines. And today, if you're a fan of the Chicago Cubs, if you're a fan of the Cleveland Indians, really, if you're a fan of sport, today is a great day. I was on the phone earlier with a business friend out in Carlsbad, and all he wanted to do was talk about Game 7 of the World Series tonight. He doesn't have a dog in the fight, doesn't care, doesn't matter. Earlier this morning, I was on the phone with a friend down in Texas. All I want to do is talk about Game 7. It's not because I'm the sports guy in their circles. It's because that's where we are today. This morning, even my son, my 12-year-old, first thing he said to me as we're talking is, how do you think the game is going to go tonight? Last night, I'm at water polo practice. He didn't want to listen to music all the way home. He wanted to hear how the Cubs game was going, or the Indians game, depending on if you're a fan or not.
You know, I was thinking about you, not to interrupt, but that's what I do best.
Sure.
Last night I went out for a meal.
Your birthday dinner.
It was a birthday dinner. Mm-hmm. And because I like this place, we're going to give it a plug. Don and Charlie's, which is a...
It had been packed.
It wasn't as crowded as you would have thought.
Really?
But it was pretty full of Cubs fans.
Sure.
And I know you like to just keep your finger on the pulse of what others are talking about. Mm-hmm. The two guys that were sitting across the table from us weren't necessarily always talking about the game. They had about a 20-minute conversation about why the NFL ratings are down this year. And I chuckled thinking, man, Brad, this is right in Brad's wheelhouse. Because you like to be out at the sports bars and you're not trying to hear what others are saying. It's just hard not to when you're sitting at the table right next to them.
Well, I think that, look, the NFL ratings discussion... you and I have it every day.
We do.
Twice a week I go stand in front of students at Cronkite and teach a sports advanced sports media class. They talk about it. I think everybody's trying to figure out, and in particular this week has just pushed them over the top, because when you have the Cubs, you have a baseball game. Let me just put it this way. When you have a baseball game just crushing the NFL in head-to-head on Sunday night, and the Dallas Cowboys are one of the two teams that are being crushed. I mean, just being hammered. The ratings weren't close. And, of course, the NFL, the apologists over on the NFL side would say, well, anybody would love those numbers. It's just a blip.
And it also has to do with the fact the Cubs are playing. Let's call a spade a spade. I mean, if the Indians and the Miami Marlins, I doubt this thing would be getting gigantic ratings.
I was talking to a friend over in Mesa this morning. They should open the Cubs ballpark tonight. They should open that stadium that's in there in the 101 and 202 and put the game on the screen.
Yeah, Sloan Park's a great place to see a game.
Sloan Park, yeah. I mean, it's
and that's a good idea.
It's a no-brainer, and they would fill that place. There'd be media all over because they're going to be looking for it tonight.
The TV crews would be out there like, hey, this is an easy story about the Cubs. And it's local. Ooh.
Here's four Cubs fans that are drunk, and yeah, we're going to win. Go, Cubs, go. But you know, they said they're going to go to the sports bar, but these days, you know, Eric, they don't come along that often. This is where you really just have fun. I don't care who wins tonight. I don't give a rat's backside about if it's the Indians or Cubs. Don't care. Haven't rooted. Don't root. That's just me. Would it be nice if the Cubs won because of the curse? Sure. Would it be very interesting if the Cubs lost just to see these Cubs fans? Because I've already taken the stance that the fact that you're here is enough. The fact that you're here is enough for this year. You've already accomplished an awful lot. That's a team, by the way, just looking at the way the Cubs are built. We've got Pedro coming on with us from Cleveland. Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider and analyst, that's in about 8 minutes. So Pedro's going to be there, and it's about how they're built. Because, look, if Kyle Hendricks tonight does not have his best stuff, and if you're Joe Maddon and John Lester is sitting down there, all hands have to be on deck. Doesn't matter if it's an inning, a third of an inning, five innings, six innings, if you're Tito Francona and Corey Kluber is scuffling along night, 3 games in 9 days, it's an awful lot of workload. But it's Game 7 of the World Series. The last time, not to drop knowledge because I had to look this up, the last time a pitcher went 3 times in a World Series, started and won all three, you have to go all the way back to 1968, Mickey Lolich of the Detroit Tigers. So there's quite a bit that's going on tonight around this game. And all the storylines are fascinating. All the storylines are interesting. The managing decisions that they're going to have to make tonight. Should Madden have put Aroldis Chapman out there in Game 6? Look, you're in a situation where you cannot afford to have any blip, any hiccup at all. If you're sitting in that manager seat and you're thinking, well, we've got a big lead, I don't care. I've just got to manage today to make sure that I have a tomorrow. Tonight, there is no tomorrow. So both managers, look, if they get 5 innings, I would think, they get 5 innings out of their starters, either side, that's got to be a plus tonight. And I would hope it's going to be a good game. The tickets are $19,500 just to get in, according to a couple of reports this morning. $19,500. Now, Pedro's probably out there trying to scalp tickets. No, I'm just kidding. We'll have Pedro here in about 7-8 minutes. So there are other things that are going on tonight. And yeah, I am fighting it today. My voice is a little shaky, so we'll just roll with it. It happens. A little bit later on the show, we're going to talk college football playoff. So Washington got left out. And yesterday I sat here and said, well, Washington's got to get in, right? But as they were left out, I would take Washington over Texas A&M myself. I think part of it just in my head is Texas A&M has a loss. Texas A&M last year wasn't very good. We could see Washington coming together last season. Yeah, I am one of those guys. It's a worthless, meaningless poll, but you do talk about it the first week of November. Next week it will change, so on and so forth.
Yeah, you took the cheese. Congratulations. That's exactly what the college football playoff wanted you to do. They want you to be talking about, Texas A&M number 4 over Washington when they're really not even better than Louisville.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right on that.
I've been suckered into that in the past, and I'm not going to do it anymore. So,
well, then I'll talk to myself about it.
Okay.
It's fine.
It only makes me mad. So what? What's the point?
Mad is that they hooked you, or mad is that you look at it top to bottom and say these guys just threw Texas A&M there to get people talking. And that's
it. Because it's not where you start, it's where you finish. And this is like reality TV. They want you to keep watching. They want you to talk about it. They want controversy. And
Washington's schedule, though, is not that great.
And Texas A&M's is. Prairie View A&M, New Mexico State, Lamar. Who's the best team Texas A&M beat? Auburn. Okay, they're okay, I guess.
Is Auburn better than Utah?
Is Tennessee that good? No. Is South Carolina that good? No. They played Alabama really well for a half. It defies – I mean, Washington is undefeated. They're
Washington
undefeated.
Going into overtime at U of A.
I see that.
Okay, that's not good.
But Washington passes the eye test. Does Texas A&M eye test?
You and I know that. You and I know that.
But we live on the West Coast.
And now
you got me all aggravated.
But the thing is, they haven't played USC yet, Washington. They haven't played Washington State yet. So I don't care. I mean, I think ASU is going to go up there and just get their doors
blown
off.
Of course,
I agree.
They can't
stop anybody.
I think Washington, Brad, is going to get hurt by the fact that the Pac-12 is solid, but it's nothing out of the ordinary.
Well, it's not.
I mean, Oregon's way down.
That's the team.
Okay, Stanford's way down.
That's the team, though. Oregon being so bad this year, and they're bad, okay? Withstanding what they did to ASU, the fact that Oregon is so bad, because that is a measuring stick game, right? I'd say there's that. I'd also say that having the Washington-Utah game on FS1 didn't help.
No.
FS1, you've got to search really hard to find FS1. FS1 is not even on some cable networks. In like gyms and that sort of thing. Last night, I'm working out. They didn't even have the World Series on last night. I was pissed. I'm like, okay, I came in here to do my workout. I'm going to watch the game.
And that's on Fox. That should be easy to find,
It's a big
right?
Fox, but they didn't have it on. So, you know, it goes back to the TV deal. It goes back to nothing is going to change in terms of national perception in the Pac-12. It's never going to change. As long as the Pac-12 network sits there and has their inadequate deal with DirecTV, where fans can't see it, one. Two, ASU and U of A are always going to be stuck playing games that start at 10 o'clock on the East Coast on Saturday nights. So until the league, until this conference, or until ASU and U of A wake up and say, you know, maybe we should go to another conference like the Big 12 or whatever it ends up being, because we could have a 1 o'clock in the afternoon game at Texas Tech, and we're not asking our fans to bake in September. Like, really, what is the benefit to ASU and U of A being in the Pac-12 conference? It's an inadequate TV deal. They get all these lousy start times. They're never going to get more attention than USC, UCLA, Stanford, or Cal because they're up in the Bay Area, or Oregon because of the Nike deal, or up in Seattle with Washington. It's not going to happen. So what really is putting them in this place? And I think it does hurt Washington. I said yesterday Washington because I didn't think a one-loss team deserved to be there. That's the way they decided to go. I don't agree with it. You're right. You're right. I mean, they are doing it to get us to talk. That said, and I threw out some scenarios yesterday of what happens if Michigan loses in the Big Ten title game to Wisconsin. Or what happens this week? Can LSU at home beat Alabama this week? Ed Orgeron has them playing great. In fact, my voice sounds like Ed Orgeron today. I sound like Coach O. I'm very much looking forward to that game. So we're going to get into that a little bit later on. And there's also some big news in recruiting going on nationally, some reform meetings that are starting today in Chicago that I think coaches, I think fans, and recruits are going to need to know these changes. We're going to get into that in about 15 minutes. But up next, we'll go to Cleveland. World Series tonight, final game. Pedro Gomez live on the spot. ESPN baseball analyst and insider with us every week. I'm Brad Sussmat.
It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sussmat.
Pedro Gomez in Cleveland, game 7 tonight. And that's that. That's the end of the baseball season. How many of these situations have you been in your career?
I've been in quite a few Game 7s, and they always, always are really exciting because of just the finality of it all. You know, and it doesn't have to be the World Series. It could be the League Championship Series.
Sure.
You know, I've covered... I was at the Bartman game in Game 6 at Wrigley Field, and then the Marlins win the next night to knock out the Cubs. They're pretty special. Obviously, the one in Phoenix, the D-backs and Yankees in 2001,
yep,
that was a great one. They're really never disappointing just because of all the circumstances that surround them. I mean, you just say Game 7, and it's two of the most exciting words in all of sports. Really is. I mean, even going back to the Cavaliers and the Warriors a few months ago, it was Game 7. And just, you know, it pulls you in if you have any kind of emotion.
Okay, so mentally, are you spent? Are you going to be spent? So, and I mean this in a way of the players have their jobs to do. The managers have their jobs to do. You have your job to do. You've been on the road almost all month, and it's the finality tonight. And you've got to be so laser-focused tonight with every single pitch. Do you find yourself hitting a wall, or is this an adrenaline rush for you just as it is for the players? Or is it just, it's my job and I'm here to do it?
Well, I mean, you know, because as a sports fan, I think you understand the heightened experience of being around a Game 7. But obviously, I'm not in the dugout. I'm not a player. I'm not a coach. They're at a level so much higher than anybody else. But as a fan, I think it's like anything. Like, a lot of people will tune into a Game 7 that maybe are just casual or, you know, I don't really care, but, oh, right, it's Game 7. I'll watch that. And, you know, I think your focus does go up because you do understand, especially when it's the very last game of the season. There's just something very alluring about a game seven.
Okay, so I'm sitting here in Phoenix and I'm looking at things like starting pitching tonight. How far do these two guys go? When and if does John Lester come into the game out of the bullpen? Because everybody's got to be available. I think this is all about pitching tonight off the top. Yeah, defense wasn't good last night. We saw it. But the pitching tonight in particular, what can you expect out of a guy who's going to have his third start, trying to get his third win like Mickey Lolich? Let's go on Cleveland side first with Kluber.
Well, he's been spectacular in his first two games in this World Series, because game one and game four, each game he's pitched six innings, and he's given up a combined one run in those 12 innings. So even though they've seen him about six at-bats each, 3-3, they have not been able to get to him. And now this will be another turn at seeing him, so they're going to be far more familiar, but it doesn't tend to matter if you're an elite pitcher. Great pitching, you know, there's a reason that saying exists, that great pitching will be great hitting every single time. So, Mickey Lolich saw the St. Louis Cardinals in 1968 in games 2, 5, and 7,
mm-hmm.
which it wasn't 1, 4, 7, it was 2, 5, 7. And he threw complete games in all three of those games. Bob Gibson, the year before that in 1967, saw the Cardinals in games 1, 4, and 7. Koufax has seen teams in 1, 4, and 7, or like in 1965 when he saw the Twins in 1, 5, and 7. They got a crack at him, but great pitching always wins. And I think a lot of people, while the name Corey Kluber may not jump off the page like a Clayton Kershaw, this guy did win the Cy Young a couple of years ago in the American League. This guy is an elite-level pitcher. This guy also got hurt this season, in the middle of the season, missed about 5 or 6 weeks. So his tank is not nearly as close to the E empty as you might think, because he did have some time off in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, they really only need about 4 or 5 innings out of him, because Andrew Miller is capable of going 3 innings, maybe more. Cody Allen, their closer, easily could go 2-plus innings. So if the Indians have a lead at the end of 4 or 5, you might only see 2 more pitchers, and that might be all they need on the Indian side.
Flip it over to the Cubs side then. What do you expect tonight?
Well, Kyle Hendricks, again, he's not a guy that jumps off the page at you like, whoa, dominant stuff, but he did win the ERA title this year for all of Major League Baseball. He is more of a Greg Maddux-type guy. He's going to be 89, 90 miles an hour with his fastball, but he's going to hit pinpoint locations. He's going to be able to throw all his pitches for strikes, and this part's a little more intriguing because, their closer, Aroldis Chapman, has thrown 62 pitches in the last two games.
Right.
And he is not going to be as fresh as the Indians' bullpen side. And I think we've already seen that Joe Maddon doesn't necessarily trust his bullpen as much as Terry Francona does. And that's why I think guys like John Lester and John Lackey will absolutely be coming in out of the bullpen.
Mm.
The intriguing scenario is, do you bring Lester in if there are runners on base, or do you try to get him a clean inning, meaning, to start an inning with nobody on base?
Because he's so bad at holding runners on. And defensively, he's not good either, right? I mean,
he's not good because he can't throw to a base.
Yeah.
There's a stigma with him. He threw over the first base this year to hold runners twice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean twice the entire season. Having said that, he does adjust his times to the plate. It's not like they're running crazy on him. The Milwaukee Brewers did one game this year. I think they stole 5 or 6 bases off of him, and they figured him out. And Terry Francona knows John Lester well because he was his manager in Boston. So if it is Lester, expect there to be some movement on the bases. Lackey will be ready to come in out of the bullpen. But I don't think you're going to see guys like Pedro Strop or Rondon, who have struggled a little bit this postseason. You know, you will see Chapman come in, but can he get you more than three outs because he's thrown so much in the last couple of days? That's all part of the equation and part of what makes this a fascinating drama tonight.
Pedro Gomez with us from Cleveland, ESPN Baseball Analyst Insider, Game 7 of the World Series tonight. Appreciate Pedro with us here for a couple of minutes. Do you know who's behind home plate tonight, Pedro?
I want to say Larry Vanover because he was behind game one, and there's a six-man rotation. And so, Vanover is considered to have a little bit of a tight zone.
Mm-hmm.
He's more of a hitter's umpire. So, you know, you could see a little bit of body language from the pitchers on the mound.
In terms of the managers, what has struck you in covering Madden and Tito going head-to-head here these last six games about both of them?
What I think I've loved more than anything is the fact that they're managing with desperation, knowing it's the World Series, we've got to get a win tonight, which is why you've seen guys like Andrew Miller come in the fifth inning,
mm-hmm.
or Aroldis Chapman come in with one out in the seventh inning in back-to-back games. You know, it's not about, okay, we have a three-game series in the middle of June, and let's punt today, and we'll worry about tomorrow. You don't punt in the World Series. You try to win every single night. And I think the other thing that really has intrigued me is the fact that while both of these organizations are analytics-driven to a large degree, you're seeing the managers really being allowed to make some decisions here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about, you know, a GM handing over a lineup card going, this is your lineup tonight.
Yeah.
The manager truly has a say in who's out there. And last night with a guy like Trevor Naquin in center field, who's not really a center fielder, Francona was going more for, let's get some speed out there. And it bit him hard, especially in that first inning with that drop fly ball. But it's a decision that he is making. And that's you know, you're seeing guys that have 25 relationships with the 25 players, and you're seeing that a manager is much more to an organization than what a lot of front offices believe a manager is.
Before I let you go, so you're covering Game 7 of the World Series, but I will ask, have you heard anything while you've been back there on the Arizona Diamondbacks' search for a manager?
I'm actually hearing that it's down to a final four. And it's Phil Nevin, who managed the AAA team for the Diamondbacks in Reno this year. It's Torey Lovullo, who has been the bench coach in Boston for the last few years for John Farrell, and who Mike Hazen is very familiar with from his years in Boston. It is Alex Cora, who's interviewed for the job, but apparently is not going to get the call, the nod. And Don Wakamatsu, our former Ahwatukee resident, who has been a manager with the Seattle Mariners, who has been with the Kansas City Royals the last few years, and who is considered a pretty good hire going forward. But I still think that the final two are either Phil Nevin or Torey Lovullo. And it's going to be one of those two guys is what I'm hearing.
If it's Phil Nevin, it strikes me then that is the current regime of owner and president saying, yeah, we brought you here to be the GM, but this is the guy we want. If it's Lovullo.
We talked about this a little bit last week, and I completely agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's no slight towards Phil Nevin. It's just very obvious that it's still the Derek and Ken show. So.
Yes, correct. Yeah. Correct.
Let's go off that. Appreciate your time and insight as always. Thanks, Pedro.
Okay, Brad, take care.
See you. There's Pedro Gomez from Cleveland, Game 7 of the World Series. Down to a Final Four. Final Four for the Diamondbacks, too. Phil Nevin, Torey Lovullo, Alex Cora, Don Wakamatsu. I'm hoping it's Lovullo. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Hey, by the way, it's interesting stuff with Pedro on the Diamondbacks manager stuff. Found this picture this morning involving food and the Cubs. And you know, I know that many of you today, it's like a national holiday. You're going to fly your W and all that stuff tonight. But we had a little bit of fun with this. We have that picture. Yeah, there's your pregame meal. That's what it looks like for your day today. You're just going to go clog your arteries away, knock yourself out. Like Portillo's should be full today, right?
Yeah.
Don and Charlie's is a natural. You were there last night. Where else in Phoenix are we thinking Chicago?
Oh,
places?
There's the Chicago Hamburger Company over on Indian School and 38th Street that's been there for decades. I'm sure that's going to be quite crowded.
Best Cubs bar in town.
I don't know.
I
don't know. I'm not a Cubs fan, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah, everywhere. No, that's true. That's true. But this will be a night for bar owners in Phoenix where, gosh, they'll kill it this week. The fact that the World Series, I saw where Fox, obviously they're getting gargantuan ratings and just dwarfing the NFL and just crushing the NFL with their numbers. But it's interesting. Remember last week, Eric, we were talking about FS1. Now FS1, nobody knew where FS1 was, and all of a sudden FS1 was getting their biggest numbers ever. And they put out this big advertisement to fans to see the number one rated cable network in the country. Well, this week they're number 66. So just so we're clear on this, it's the Cubs and it's baseball. And when you don't have the Cubs in baseball, you're nothing. You're only as good as your lead. And when people wonder why, man, these rights fees, boy, they pay a lot of money. And man, my ticket prices are going up. And I just want to see the game at home and on television. Yeah, that's why. Because people are seeing this and they want to consume it. We're not denigrating any sport one way or the other. It's just a fact that this has been an old-fashioned butt-kicking by baseball on the NFL. And it's good for fans of baseball. College football, though, I think has been just fine. College football, it's been a great, I think a terrific season for college football. I'm already looking forward and fired up to this weekend to see LSU play against Alabama. I don't have an ASU game to watch this weekend. The U of A game at Washington State, I don't even know if that's Pac-12 Network. It probably is. I can't imagine it'd be anything else. But, you know, I'll catch some of it just because it's my job. I've got to do it. But I'll be watching LSU and Alabama, and there's a couple of other games this weekend that I'll check out. Recruiting, though, is a big part of what we do here. We have our recruiting roundup. You fans are very passionate about recruiting. You parents are very passionate about recruiting because you want to know how to get your kid involved. There has been an oversaturation, though, I think, in recruiting, and a lot of it is going to be overhauled, and it's going to start today. Today in Chicago, at the Big Ten's conference headquarters in Chicago, they're having meetings today, and part of this is let's get away from all these trips that colleges are paying for kids that have no interest in going to those schools, that have to go by themselves rather than going with their parents. It's a very antiquated way of going about convincing a kid to come to a school. We have talked about having an early signing period, and it seems to me that they're going to go that direction. A new 72-hour signing window that would open on the last Wednesday in June and at the same time as the mid-December junior college signing period. So they're going to look at doing that. They're going to allow colleges to bring on high school kids to make official visits July 25th through July 31st. Because right now a kid can only go in October. He finishes his game on a Friday night. Saturday morning he flies in or late Friday night. It's not really good for the kid. And so you have kids that have told me through the years, I'm going to go to this school even though I have no interest in going. It's a free trip. Why would I not want to go check out said campus, go through the facilities? It's a huge waste of money, more than anything else from what I see. So there hasn't been much pushback from the coaches, the recruits, administrators, to the restrictions on satellite camps. Remember Jim Harbaugh last June, it made for great conversation for us. We're sitting here in a slow period of time in June, and here's Jim Harbaugh putting on his camp in San Francisco or putting on his camp down in Texas. They're going to get away from all that. They're going to eliminate all that. Of course, there's going to be ways for recruits to be contacted illegally. It will continue to happen. Anytime that I hear people say the recruiting business isn't as bad as you state it, Brad, you're overreacting on it, I just kind of laugh and chuckle and say you're being really naive or you just don't want things to change. So for schools like Arizona State and Arizona, how's this going to impact them? I would think, Eric, correct me on this if I'm wrong, the fact that they can have kids come visit ASU, they would be allowed to take visits from July 25th through July 31st. That hurts ASU. That doesn't help ASU.
That hurts ASU.
So, and it hurts the U of A.
Yes.
So
we don't have to tell you why, but it hurts ASU.
I mean, anybody doesn't know why it hurts them.
There's a reason why people leave at that time of year.
And it helps USC.
Sure.
It helps UCLA. It helps Washington.
Yep.
You're not flying a kid in November and he's freezing his tail off and saying he's having a miserable visit. So this is not good for ASU. The satellite camp thing, I don't think that's that big of a deal. Jason Jewell could correct me on that. I don't think that's that big of a deal. I know it's great to bring in kids from all around the country, and ASU coaches are part of satellite camps, but I don't think that that's a big game changer, difference maker.
Do you think recruiting and things like this are always just going to be trial and error? Because are you really going to make everyone happy as to when they can go on official visits? Some kids want the early signing period. Some kids want the late signing period. And there's so many, like you said, there's so many loopholes and so many ways that coaches can tiptoe around the rules and figure out how to communicate with social media and all these other back roads. I'm just curious if this is something that in a year we're going to be talking about, oh, yeah, they don't like this and they want to go back to this way, or they're thinking about having two, three different signing days. And because college football recruiting is just blowing up. It's becoming such a big deal.
It's a cottage industry. You know, though, I think it has reached its tipping point. I do think that, because how many times do you see a story now and a kid who's a walk-on who's making it? A lot. There are times, like the other day, the ASU game was on, and I think it was Roxy Bernstein's making a big deal about how ASU's starting two redshirt freshmen and a walk-on on the offensive line. So what? Don't care. Walk-ons and guys that aren't recruited are happening more often than not. There's mistakes that are made right and left. I was telling Paula about this yesterday, about I'm hearing ASU didn't recruit well on the defensive side of the football. I don't know. The first Wednesday of February every year, we couldn't believe we got this kid. It's not just Todd or Rich. It's every coach. We couldn't believe we got this kid. This kid's great. This kid's a difference maker. This kid's a game changer. This kid is this. This kid is that. And so when I hear that, well, they've missed on quite a few recruits and it just hasn't worked out on the defensive side of the football, yeah, we cover it here because there's interest, but I don't go over the top. Like the whole five-star stuff is just nonsense. I mean, it really is. There's players that I've seen in this state that have a lot of stars next to them, and they go out after they're done playing high school, and they can't play with one star. And they get run off one program, and they go to the next. Or there's kids. I've even seen some kids in this year's class. Supposedly, this is the best player at this position, that position. I'm not going to call out a 17-year-old sitting here behind a microphone. But there's some kids that are getting a lot of praise in pub. I don't see it. I just don't see it.
And you get a different attitude with the two- and three-star kids or the one-star kids or the
sure.
preferred walk-ons than you're going to get with the four- or five-star football players, because there's more every day for the lightly recruited or walk-ons. Every day is a huge day.
Right.
Practice, film session, being able to be on special teams. With the four and five stars, everyone's been telling them how great they are. There's a sense of entitlement, and sometimes you don't have the burning, you know, Christian Kirk's the exception. That guy's an amazing person, an amazing football player, driven to be great, had all the accolades, but a lot of those big, highly decorated stars don't turn out to be really good college football players, like you said.
Well, what, you know, here's something I found.
Or they bounce around from school to school.
Right, right. Well, they're not happy with their situation. There's players on teams, high college teams, and you hear about, well, we got to make sure he gets to class. And this kid may be highly regarded, lots of stars, and you hear the backstory. And it's not really fair for me to sit here and say this kid can't get to class. So I'm not going to call him out. As they progress through their college career, I will call them out. As they get to juniors and seniors, I'm not going to call out a freshman who's 18 years of age. When I go down there and teach, it's amazing to me how many excuses I get given to me from 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. And this is a larger deal. This is a larger conversation. I don't know. I've had 4 kids. They've done pretty well for themselves, but I've made mistakes. My wife's made mistakes. Done pretty well for themselves. But accountability is not something that my kids haven't been able to grab onto. They are all accountable. I get this, well, I just kind of forgot. Well, I just wasn't really paying attention. Well, I couldn't get it done. I didn't have enough time in the day. I hear more excuses. This is going to sound like, man, get off my lawn. The same thing's going on in college. Like, I think one of the problems they're going to have with this is going to be a kid's going to sign in June. And then the kid is going to, A, not play very hard or very well his senior year of high school because he doesn't want to get hurt. I was already with a dad on the sideline of a top recruit in this state this year in September who told me to my face, we have to hold him out of games because we do not want him to get hurt for next season because we think there's going to be a chance for him to play next year. And I looked at that dad and I just kind of shook my head. Like, that's not fair to these other high school kids. I don't care how many stars your kid has. Don't care. That's not fair. That's not right. So there's going to be that side of it where a kid will sign and say, yeah, I'll just take my foot off the pedal. Then there's going to be the kid that signs and the coach is going to leave or the position coach is going to change or they're going to go recruit 4 other guys at his position and that kid's going to get butthurt and say, oh my God, I thought you guys were in love with me. Well, no, there's competition here. Well, then I don't want to come. So you're going to have that issue that's going to sit there, but they've already signed a letter. So how do you get out of that? Then you're going to have life stuff that happens. Mom gets sick. Dad gets sick. Sister gets sick. Grandma gets, whatever it is, you're going to have life situations. So that's going to change. When you sign letters of intent right now in February, you're already on campus. Some kids are already on campus. They get out of high school after December. But when you sign in February, some people say it's too late. I don't know. Life changes pretty quick. So I could see some problems arising from all of this. They're trying to control costs, the waste of kids traveling. It's really interesting. I mean, I'm into Cubs and Indians tonight, but I think this is just as fascinating because it's going to change the whole landscape of colleges trying to find ways to get new players to come in. It's just like social media was the hot thing 2012, 2013, 2014. It's still hot. But back then, they had to limit the number of texts and the number of contacts. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm going to call it a wrap for today because I think I've just done about enough as I've got in the. Are you fine with this?
Yeah, you've got things crawling around in your throat
you think,
right
you think
now.
I've done like enough today.
Animals and bugs and
we've done
other
5
things.
Years. Of this, I'm due.
I mean,
it is
the Brad Sussmat show. So if you just want to come on for a minute every day, you
I'm
can.
Done.
It's your show.
I'm done. So thanks for being with us.